I want you to listen to me. I have a lot of things I want to get off my chest.
Look in my eyes, what do you see? The cult of personality.
Welcome to the Condo on the Moon podcast. No Randy Savage voice this week. It's a bit of a serious tone we're taking to the podcast this week, and if you haven't been living under a rock in the last 24 hours, you probably know why. Because the interview of the year, certainly, and maybe of the decade, has happened where CM Punk, in true CM Punk fashion, showed up on The Art of Wrestling with his good friend Colt Cabana, and boy, did he tell everything? Oh yes, he did. To dissect it all and go through it all with me, as always, Chris Walder on the podcast. Welcome, Chris Walder.
How's it going, buddy?
Hey, it was a busy Thanksgiving. I'm glad I'm not an American, and I felt like my holiday was stolen away from me because CM Punk definitely blew up the internet for American Thanksgiving.
And he didn't even have to balance a champagne glass on his ass.
No, that was in your article that you wrote on WrestlingRumors.com.
That's a cheap little plug there.
Yeah, yeah, I'll put it in there for you. Chris wrote about this topic for Wrestling Rumors, and I did, of course, for CondoOnTheMoon.com. We encourage you to check out both those articles, and they kind of dissect some of what was in the interview with CM Punk, but we're talking, like, this was a 90-minute-plus interview with Colt Cabana and CM Punk. And one thing I want to say off the top before we get into everything, a couple things, actually. I want to commend Colt Cabana because I thought, you know, Colt did a really good job in conducting this interview and really allowing CM Punk to speak but chiming in at times, giving the contrarian opinion, and I thought did a hell of a job for a guy who, quite honestly, is a professional wrestler, and, you know, he does his podcast on the side and interviews people, but his first chosen vocation is obviously wrestler, not interviewer, and I thought he did a tremendous job. And secondly, I think it should be pointed out that CM Punk could have done this interview anywhere and made a ton of cash, and he chose not to do that. This wasn't advertised. He just came on with Colt Cabana, like he's done in the past, where he shows up just randomly, but they took this very seriously, and it was a spellbinding 90-plus minutes that, if you're a wrestling fan, even if you're not a CM Punk fan, you really need to go out and seek this interview, because I think it speaks to just a number of things to do with the WWE that we're going to get into in the next hour. I hope we don't go 2 hours, but for the next hour plus that we're going to talk. And I think those two things should be noted before we get into anything.
It was perfect. I absolutely love the way that it was done. And like you pointed out, you know, there were companies and internet outlets all over the world that wanted this interview. And Colt Cabana, who we all know is really good friends with CM Punk, was able to land it. And he came in sporadically, and he acted kind of like, you know, with the internet wrestling community, with all of their negativity and all of some of the tweets that they've been sending to CM Punk, and he played devil's advocate. But for the most part, he let CM Punk do his thing, and we got so many answers, and he covered so many bases. And, I mean, I've listened to it twice already, and we're going to go into it a lot more on this podcast. So good times, man, good times.
Absolutely, and you know, as for the rest of things, Sting debuting in the WWE, our road to ROH has kind of hit a detour, which we actually weren't going to have an interview this week anyway, so it worked out perfectly, but we'll do a full preview of Final Battle next week, and we'll have a guest on for you, and, you know, all the stuff with the WWE. I think our previous Survivor Series, it was what it was, and you know, the news leaked out early about Sting, so I don't think there was a huge surprise in that. So all that said, for the rest of the wrestling week, I think this story obviously takes precedent over that, so we'll dive into it. And I think it was very interesting that a lot of... I see this interview in, like, almost three different stages. I think there was there was a stage about where WWE business was involved. I think there was a stage about the booking process and how WWE's been booked. And I think there was this a big portion, and really the most relevant portion, the care the WWE takes to its wrestlers and the treatment of them. And all of this in a roundabout way to kind of sum this up before we dig into the nooks and crannies of it. This interview screamed to me as the smoking gun for why we need a union in wrestling, which was something CM Punk just briefly alluded to, but I think everything in here speaks to the need for a union in professional wrestling, and that has nothing to do with CM Punk. That has to do with every single wrestler. So if you're not a CM Punk fan and you think he's a total jerk, this could happen to your favorite wrestler. This could happen to Dolph Ziggler just as easily. This could happen to any number of people you want to list as your favorite wrestler. So it is relevant even if you're not a Punk fan, I think.
I think another point that we kind of have to make, we have to point out here, you know, the CM Punk interview, he kind of got to the masses first. And if there was ever going to be a time where Vince McMahon or Triple H was to come out and do an interview to respond and give their side of the story, I think it's in our right and the right of everyone else to say, okay, we've heard Punk, now we have to hear how they perceive things and how they believe things went down. But at the same time, you know, I kind of lean towards more, you know, what Punk is talking about, if only because, like we mentioned earlier, this was a spur-of-the-moment interview that he did. There was no publicity. He just showed up on The Art of Wrestling, and he talked and gave his side of the story and why he left World Wrestling Entertainment. So, you know, what did he really have to gain from this? Not a lot. He gave his fans an explanation because people were just dying ever since he left, since the Royal Rumble, to know, what the hell, man? But now we all have answers. But, you know, again, there is another side of this story. I'm not saying I'm 100% on board with Punk said, but it does seem rather honest, don't you think?
Yeah, there was a real authenticity to it. And even if you go back and you go into the timeline of the things that he's saying, if you line it up with certain things, like, for example, Punk talks about his desire to find out what this magic formula was going to be for the WWE Network, for himself getting paid, and not just himself, everyone else in the company, and he never got an answer. And that's consistent with the interview he did with Ariel Helwani right before he actually left. He did that interview with Ariel, and it was about 30 minutes long, and that was a really revealing interview, especially in the light of he left the company less than a week later. So it's consistent with that, and there's just the truth to it in a lot of what he's saying. He doesn't come off like he has an axe to grind, other than, I think, when we get into the different booking things, I think, yeah, you could say, yeah, maybe CM Punk has an axe to grind with this stuff. But in terms of the medical stuff, in terms of the financial stuff, it's hard for me not to believe what's coming out of his mouth, and it makes a lot of sense from when you piece it all together. And I think those are the things that are the most relevant. Whether CM Punk got booked in the main event of WrestleMania, while it means something to CM Punk, and I understand why, that really doesn't matter to the whole essence of the WWE and the WWE story to this. I mean, whoever gets into WrestleMania, while it's important, it's not going to shake the foundation of the company, whereas some of these other things, I think, do, especially the medical issues that Punk describes throughout this that really leave you wondering, like, really, what is the WWE doing to take care of their superstars? And, you know, it really boggles the mind. Like, every time CM Punk would get this injury, there was a theme in this. He would have an injury. He would go to get it fixed. There would be a call on his phone. Hey, pal. And it would be Vince McMahon on the other end of the line and pushing CM Punk to come back earlier than he should have from just a variety of injuries, from, you know, broken ribs to a busted up elbow, bad knees, you know, concussions, all of this. And that I find disturbing. And to put this into context, Punk admits that, you know, he got caught up in that and he would go back, even though it probably wasn't the best thing for him to do. Look at what happened to Dolph Ziggler when he didn't. Look at what has happened to Daniel Bryant because he hasn't. And that maybe speaks to the truth of what Punk is saying, because those guys didn't come back. And up until very recently, Dolph Ziggler was buried beyond belief in this company. And this was a guy that sat out over a month with a concussion. Daniel Bryan, he has his injuries. There's been lots of speculation on, you know, what's going on with him, and that he has been the one that has been the driving force in making sure that this all gets done right and he's fixed up and ready to go. And when you look at the angle that the WWE had with Daniel Bryan, there was an inherent pressure on him to come back because they were going to take away the title that he won. And I think there was some reality mixed in with the storyline there.
I think it kind of reminds me of the situation with Kurt Angle, who was considered at that time the workhorse of the company. He was a main event guy, but he could basically do it all. He was working the pay-per-views, he was working the live events. Anything that Vince McMahon demanded of him, Angle was always willing to do because he had this kind of, you know, mentality that he was the best in the world, similar to CM Punk. And like you touched on, Punk always wanted to come back because he always wanted to keep his spot as the locker room leader, as the best wrestler in the company, but it was to the detriment of his body, and he suffered a lot of injuries and a lot of serious injuries that he touched on during the podcast. And it's scary how, you know, kind of Vince McMahon downplays it only because he needed Punk to work, but he physically couldn't do it. And then some of the tests that they were doing to make sure that he was healthy that were just borderline bullcrap. And, you know, in the sporting world these days, I touched on it in my article, the NFL and the NBA putting so much emphasis on taking care of their athletes, you know, especially when it comes to concussions. And then you hear the story that CM Punk tells about the Royal Rumble and how he basically worked another 40 minutes after being injured by of all people, Kofi Kingston, who he's best friends with. I don't know what their relationship is like now. It's scary to think that, you know, WWE, who always goes out of their way to tell everybody that we have one of the best medical staffs on the planet, that we always look after our superstars. For Punk to tell a story like this, it's like, where does the truth lie in all of this?
And, you know, in reality, if there's any truth to any of this, I mean, he does end up talking about how he sued to get the money that he was owed, which was highly publicized, and the whole thing with 2K. But if fans are going to say CM Punk greedy, I got news for you. He's not greedy, because he could have sued them for the medical issues that he had for a hell of a lot more money.
Exactly.
And I think the most stunning one of all these things, I mean, the concussion things are obviously disturbing, and that'll be a whole topic to discuss later. But this cyst that he had on his back, or this calcium deposit, or whatever they thought it was, he wanted it taken off. WWE doctors wouldn't take it off. It became this ongoing thing for over 3 months. He goes, after he has left the company, in that famous blowout in Cleveland that I'm sure we'll get into as well, he is convinced by his soon-to-be wife to go see her doctor down in Florida. And another doctor, literally, by him dropping his pants, makes the diagnosis right away of what's wrong with him. And he had a severe staph infection. Like staph infections have very different levels, and I'm not a doctor here, and I'm not going to try and play one. But based on the story that CM Punk told, and based on the information that he provided, this was a serious staph infection, and by the doctor's own account, for the amount of time he had it, the doctor assessed he could have died.
I would recommend not going on Google and typing in MRSA, which is the strand of the staph infection that he had, because I did that, and let me tell you, that's some of the most gruesome pics you'll see on the internet. And if that is what CM Punk had and what it could have possibly turned into, then shame on the WWE medical staff for not being able to say, you know what, I mean, like you said with AJ Lee's doctor, all he had to do was look at it to say what it is, and there was excuse after excuse after excuse from I think what was his name, Chris Adman, the doctor that Punk referred to like a million times.
He's the typical WWE doctor. Everyone's seen him. He's always around, and actually, he was on Jericho's podcast not that long ago, I believe, in the episode with Justin Roberts, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this strand of staph infection needed a very specific brand of antibiotics, and what Chris was prescribing to him was, you know, useful for staph, but not the one that Punk had, so it was making him nauseous, it gave him a fever, he was basically, you know, dry heaving every night for 3 months, and thank God that AJ Lee's doctor discovered it, because we might be having to do a tribute episode of CM Punk if that wasn't the case.
And, I mean, if that happened and all of this came to light, I mean, Lord knows the wrongful death suit that the WWE could be facing from one of their employees, which,
yeah.
That was the one thing. I mean, he talks about a great many things. The one thing I was left wondering, how on earth can AJ Lee be a part of this company knowing what we all know now?
She's gone sooner. I think a TLC, or if not TLC, then maybe even earlier than that. By the end of 2014, she's definitely out of there.
But even though we didn't know, she knew, and she's been a part of this company through all of this. I can't imagine that. And I mean, I'm almost as excited to hear what she has to say about all this, which I'm sure we won't hear until she's gone. But I can't believe that she's been able to function in this company knowing all that we know. And by the end of it, you'll hear. I mean, this didn't just impact on CM Punk. This impacted on her life as well, because I guess we'll get into it now. I mean, the WWE has painted this story that CM Punk basically quit the company on January 27th in Cleveland, Ohio, and that was it. Well, that really wasn't it. CM Punk walked out of the company, true, on January 27th. About a week or two later, Vince McMahon texts him, tries to get him to come back. Punk says, there's no chance in hell, that's not happening. A couple weeks later, he gets a text from Vince McMahon saying that he's suspended from the WWE up until the day after WrestleMania. Then, the WWE does not contact him, there's no communication, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, Hunter texts him after he had been inquiring himself about his royalty checks and what happened to his royalty check, and he had an old royalty check that he wanted to have reissued, and no communication with that. Punk tries, contacts the lawyer for the WWE, an accountant or some guy that was in charge of it as well, and had some conversations with talent relations as well as that. But then we get to Hunter, who 2 days before his wedding texts him and all of a sudden wants to talk. CM Punk says, no problem, I've always been here, I was always willing to talk, but right now, obviously, you know, I'm getting married in 2 days, this really isn't the appropriate time. I'm paraphrasing, but basically this is what he was saying. But if you can get those checks all taken care of and sent to me, you're my first phone call when I get back from my honeymoon. 2 days later, the morning of the wedding, a knock on CM Punk's door, a FedEx informing him he was fired from the WWE.
That was harsh. But again, I've heard this point come up. I don't think you can mail something like a FedEx to get to someone on a specific date. Although you can, whenever you mail something, you have the mindset of it's going to get there at a certain time. So when WWE sent that out, there was always the possibility that he could be getting it on his wedding day. So when he did get it, then it was kind of a douchey move.
Oh, no. I mean, the WWE could easily pay for an express delivery overnight and get it there the day of the wedding. That I disagree. I think they totally planned that. It was totally deliberate. And when Triple H reached out to him and he kind of, he didn't he didn't get the answer that he was looking for from CM Punk. And apparently that was the last straw for the WWE side of this. And they decided to do something pretty mean-spirited. And ultimately, Punk says, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back if you ever think he's coming back to this company. Because he said, that is something that I will never forget or forgive. And, like, CM Punk is never coming back to the WWE. After this interview, I'm convinced of that. Like, we always get into the never say never in professional wrestling. This is the never. It's never happening. Ever.
But there was, again, there was never anything wrong with the way CM Punk responded to Triple H. All he said was, look, I'm getting married. I'm going to go on my honeymoon. When I come back, me and you are going to have a heart-to-heart, and we're going to hash some of these things out. Apparently, that wasn't good enough for Hunter because he always wants things done right away. But that's unreasonable under these circumstances. And like you said, that pissed off CM Punk. And I totally agree with you. I really do think that he is never going to step foot in the WWE ring again. And he, you know, for all accounts, he could wrestle. It's just not going to be for them. I think the possibility of wrestling at ROH is far greater than WWE, although that's not going to happen anytime soon, because I think the professional wrestling industry as a whole has ticked him off to the degree that he has no interest in ever lacing up his boots again, at least for the foreseeable future.
And it seems like with the deal that he struck, there is some kind of no-compete clause in the deal that he struck to get the money that was owed to him. So it doesn't look like CM Punk would be going to a rival company. Although his own lawyer said back to the WWE that he, because the WWE was convinced he was going to jump to TNA and use it as a platform to trash them. And he said, quite frankly, my client has no interest in wrestling. He just wants what's owed him, and that's it. And, you know, it is what it is. And I guess at the end of the day, it confirmed all the things that everyone thought. Like, there was, all of the theories to why CM Punk left were all proven to be true. But it was all the unknown stuff, the stuff about the fact he was fired, all these medical issues that came up, that were unbeknownst to the general public. Although people had said, especially when he came back to do that match with Jericho, I remember a lot of people saying, boy, CM Punk just doesn't look right. And like he doesn't look like the same guy. And some people read that as disinterest. Some people read that as him being hurt. I mean, now in the light of day, we realize he was wrestling with a friggin' staph infection, and he was, you know, on a bad knee and all the rest of it, and it makes sense. And that's the thing, going back again to the believability factor of what CM Punk is saying. When you piece things together, when you go back in time and you remember these moments, his story rings true. In what you saw as a fan and what was going on in the WWE at the time.
It's amazing how one 90-plus minute interview with Colt Cabana kind of changed everyone's perception about CM Punk, because for several months, everyone kind of jumped off of that bandwagon. They were calling him a quitter, or a quieter, as he referred to on the podcast, because people can't spell on social media. But now that he's kind of cleared the air on everything and explained, hey, guys, I didn't quit, I got fired, and here is reason A, B, C, and D as to why I left, you know, I can only speak personally, and for my opinion, I was kind of jumping off of the Punk bandwagon just because of the way he left, and I'm never one to say, you know, as much as I hate a situation, I'm just not going to walk up and leave. You know what I mean? And that's what he did. But to hear his side of the story, it just changes so many things for me, and it changes a lot of things for a lot of people. I think now when you turn on WWE programming, if you thought the CM Punk chants were bad before, if it was just for AJ Lee matches, I think that the true marks out there in the IWC are going to start showing up to these events and chanting his name, because some of the things that he indicated in this podcast painted WWE in such a negative light, and they've been digging themselves into a hole as of late anyway, just because their programming has been so bad, and the last thing they need is for something like this to come out, yet here we are.
Yeah, and I think too, the next time they hit Chicago.
Oh, my God.
I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, I really don't, because I think that place will explode. Like they've maneuvered very well in their trips back to Chicago since he's left. I don't know if there's any way that you can maneuver away now. I think it's going to be a very toxic environment when the WWE is next there. And it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of, avoided Chicago for a little bit. That might not be a bad idea. And the other thing, in the settlement, and we'll get into some of the financials now here, we had briefly touched on there was this royalty check that Punk hadn't cashed, and there was another one that was due to him that they withheld. In the settlement for that, the WWE tried to convince Punk to come to an agreement where neither side would speak about this, which makes me think again, boy, that sounds like he has some truth, or he has something to say that the WWE doesn't want him to say. And he, to his credit, said, no, I want no part of that. And part of the reason why he wouldn't agree to such terms was the fact that they had already pictured him, or painted him, as this quitter on their television, and basically ran his name through the mud through some of the things they were doing. So, again, like, if the WWE has an explanation for this that will change minds, I'd love to hear it, but I don't think we're going to hear it. We're definitely not hearing it on some podcast with Stone Cold Steve Austin and Vince McMahon.
I was about to bring that up. Do you think there's any chance that Steve brings this up to Vince?
No, because, as much as Steve likes to claim he's independent and stuff like that, guess what? Who has the only podcast that's advertised on Monday Night Raw?
I know what you mean, but I think a lot of people are going to be tuning in with the idea that Austin probably has the guts to confront Vince McMahon about CM Punk.
I think they'll be very disappointed. I think they'll get, if they get an answer, if the question or topic is even brought up, I think they'll get a very generic answer from Vince McMahon. And Stone Cold, because of what I said, isn't going to press him like they've been building this podcast to be. Stone Cold, at the end of the day, likes Vince McMahon. They're pretty tight. And I don't think Stone Cold is the type of guy who's going to burn a bridge with Vince McMahon that, let's face it, can make him a lot of money.
Well, what about a guy like Chris Jericho, eh? 'Cause CM Punk kind of touched on it briefly about why he hasn't kept relationships with certain superstars in the company. And one name that came up was Y2K, only because he felt that Jericho might use any kind of conversation that they had to promote on his podcast, and say, and Jericho might come on and say, well, I just had a 5-minute chat with Punk, and he kind of filled me in on a couple of things, and he would use that to further his show and get views and clicks and whatever. So I can understand why Punk wouldn't want to do that. It goes back to him not advertising this thing in the first place. I don't think he cared about the money. I don't think he cared about, what network picked it up or how big of a story it was going to become. I think he just wanted to clear the air on a lot of things, and that he did.
He even said, in terms of the money he was owed, that if the WWE had sent him the notice that he was in breach of contract on January the 28th after he walked out, he wouldn't have pursued the money. He wouldn't have cared. Because he said, and this is the thing that I take away from this as a fan of the person who's CM Punk, who's entertained me for years on end, not just in WWE, but in ROH as well. He talked about how happy and how at peace he was in his life. And that really, for me, is the best news that comes out of this. Because there was a time where CM Punk just looked miserable and looked like he was really just going through the ringer. And to see him nowadays and see how happy he is, and I think a lot of wrestling fans that were fans of just the Punk character, they almost were angry by that he was so happy to be away from professional wrestling and away from the WWE. And just Punk's nature is to kind of push the envelope and be, you know, a little snarky and a little, the way he is. I mean, people know how he is. But the fact that he is happy and he's healthy and he's married and enjoying his life, I think, is the best thing of all out of this.
One of the things he mentioned about certain booking decisions, and we both noticed that in the months leading up to Royal Rumble, he just looked completely out of it when he was working his program with Ryback and Paul Heyman. And,
oh, we'll get into the Ryback later.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Ryback, obviously, but you know, he mentioned some of the conversations that he had with Vince McMahon and Triple H, and one that stuck out to me was, you know, when he was talking about working with the part-timers, the guys that only come back for the major pay-per-views, i.e. Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, Triple H, and The Rock, and why he was always kind of called upon to work with those guys, yet every single time he would put them over, he would show up the next night on Monday Night Raw, and all of those guys would be spoken for. They'd go back to Hollywood, they'd go back home to nurse their injuries, they'd go back to spend their millions and millions of dollars they made for that one match, but it was always Punk that was left to kind of man the ship, and his stock continued to fall because he was never able to beat any of these big guys, and maybe that held him back from being the main event of WrestleMania, which he so desperately wanted to do. And who knows, if he was able to get into the main event, maybe he would have called it a career shortly thereafter anyways, but I completely agree with him that, I mean, I would be frustrated too if I was getting paid, and he was getting paid less than all of these guys. That's unacceptable, right?
Well, that goes to the whole thing about the WWE Network and how he had been questioning and questioning and questioning, and the response from Vince McMahon was, ha ha ha, pal, we haven't figured it out. You know, and there was, I don't know if Punk brought this to light or it was one of the wrestling insider sheets, but there was supposedly going to be this grand meeting for all of the talent near the end of February, right before WrestleMania, after Punk left. And this meeting, to the best of anyone's knowledge, has never happened. Like, it's never, we've never been given definitive word that the talent has been briefed on how the WWE Network is going to affect their contracts and their pay. No one has ever talked about it, and it's never been discussed. And it was funny, as Punk was doing this and needling him, to the point of how covert this has been about the network, Randy Orton, who I think most of us would assume fairly good buddies with Triple H, I think that's a fair assessment.
Correct.
Randy Orton is asking CM Punk if he's getting answers about the network. So that means even a guy like Randy Orton, who he might not be Hunter's best friend or Paul's best friend, but he's certainly a guy that, you know, has traveled the roads with Triple H and someone who Triple H has always valued, he didn't know. Like, maybe John Cena knew, I don't know, but other than that, I can't think of anyone in this company that knew what was going on with the network. And that's a huge thing. And again, this is one of those things where I go back to, if you're not a CM Punk fan, if you think he's a jerk, if you never liked him, this same stuff is happening to your favorite guy, Dolph Ziggler, or if it's whoever. I keep bringing up Dolph for some reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, whoever your favorite wrestler is beyond that, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, whoever the heck you want to talk about. And we'll get into The Shield later, too, because there's a story about them in this. But it just, it all connects to a larger picture in the WWE of the WWE just not being forthright with their talent. And that's why I said, near the beginning of all this, this whole interview to me is the smoking gun for why wrestling so badly needs a union for their wrestlers. And this was something we talked about on this podcast a while back, and I talked about way back in the 1980s this was a thing, where Jesse Ventura tried to get a union into the WWE, and he was thwarted by Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, I'm not a big union person. Like personally, I'm not a fan of unions. I don't necessarily subscribe to them as a necessary thing in 2014, but when I hear the things that went on with CM Punk, my God, like, this man, just for his own personal medical health, needed a union to be there to stand up for him. And he didn't have it. And unions at their very foundation, now we're getting into a history lecture here, and I apologize, but unions at their very foundation, they weren't brought in so much about what you were getting paid. It was about your own personal safety and your own job security. Like, this is at the core of that. And we're in 2014. What industry is like this?
It's bad, but there's not going to be a union. There's never been a union in wrestling, and it's not going to happen now, and it's certainly not going to stem off of what CM Punk is talking about. And to go back to what you said earlier, Punk was the voice of the voiceless to the masses in the WWE universe, but he was also the voice of the locker room, in a sense. He was the only one who had the testicular fortitude, as Mick Foley always likes to say, to stand up to management, or at least kind of get his opinion out there and ask questions and confront the likes of Vince McMahon and Triple H. I don't think anyone else on the roster today, with the exception of John Cena, who already has seniority and can say whatever the hell he wants because he's the money machine for the WWE, no one else could pull a Punk and say, you know what, we have issues with the WWE Network. We have issues with the fact that we're not getting paid nearly as much as when the network wasn't a thing because our pay-per-view royalties are going down. Our WrestleMania paychecks are being cut in half. This is not cool, and this is not fair, but I think everyone is so worried about kind of ticking off someone, because you can even look at a guy like Cesaro these days, someone who clearly said something to piss off management, and now...
Oh, I know what it was. It's been out there.
Did he mention it?
He criticized the Randy Orton-John Cena match.
Yeah, but we don't know for sure that that's the reason. Are we open to something else?
I suppose, but I mean, for lack of something better to go with, I mean, that seems pretty, like, it fits the timeline, let's put it that way.
Because people are telling me, I don't remember hearing it in the podcast, but people are telling me that Punk said something along the lines that Cesaro has been in the doghouse for quite a while now, which doesn't make a lot of sense, just because when Punk was around, Cesaro won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. He went on to side with Paul Heyman, but that obviously didn't work out. I can see why you think, you know, and it probably is the Randy Orton, John Cena comments, but again, like with Cesaro, the minute you say something stupid, regardless of who it's directed at or what it's about, you're going to be in trouble for it, and I think that has a lot to do with the reason why no one is going to pull a Punk and stand up for themselves, which is a shame, because a lot of changes need to be made.
Well, what Punk might have been referencing to is there was another time when Cesaro was kind of in the doghouse, and I don't know what that was about, but if you remember, CM Punk famously showed up for the WrestleMania press conference, I believe it was for 29,
yeah,
wearing the Cesaro t-shirt, mm-hmm. and He did all his interviews that day in the Cesaro t-shirt, and even Mark Henry chimed in one of his interviews, kind of in support of Cesaro. So it was interesting, but it's just, you know, it is what it is. But and I tend to agree with you. I don't know if you'll ever be able to get a union in there, but you know, with all this medical stuff and the fact they're a publicly traded company, maybe it won't be the wrestlers themselves. Maybe it will be outside influences that will demand it. Because, you know, maybe that's the only way it happens. Because I agree. I think, you know, there's too much of a pay structure difference. And there's too much of guys competing with one another for money and for positions to get them all organized to form a union. That's always been the problem.
I wish I could kind of have a better understanding of what the average salary is these days amongst a WWE superstar, because I think Punk was probably at the head of that totem pole. He was making multi-millions plus royalties plus, you know, endorsements or, you know, the WWE 2K15, 14, 13, whatever, video game checks. But, you know, guys that are at the bottom of the barrel, and I know that NXT guys, the people that work at the developmental center, are getting paid less than, you know, they can't even live on that stuff, but they use it for the opportunity. But
other than recently, I think the guys they brought in recently, the Kevin Owens now, who, by the way, if we were doing our normal podcast, I would be crowing about his latest promo, which is fantastic. But the Kevin Owens, the Devitts, it seems they got a little bit more than the standard rate. But yeah, no one's getting rich down in Florida. They're living a nice life with the nice weather and no taxes, but they're not exactly banking a ton of money.
Have we ever thought, I mean, because this isn't like the first shoot interview that we've had in recent memory. There's also been the Alberto Del Rio one, and a lot of stuff that Del Rio talks about, you know, Punk touches on as well. I think that's what makes me, leans me towards the side of, you know what, WWE is kind of corrupt behind the scenes, and there are a lot of issues and problems amongst management and the talent, and especially the medical staff that we're unaware of, because I looked on Twitter yesterday, and Road Dogg Jesse James, who's an agent and trainer for WWE now, and he was defending the company in the face of a lot of guys that were attacking his opinion about CM Punk, and you know,
yeah, Road Dogg needs to stop doing that. He's done this before, and you know, like I know he's Hunter's buddy and all of that, but you know what? This was one that if I was an employee of the WWE. Wrestler, whatever the hell I did, radio silent on this one if I want to keep my job.
Actually, some Twitter accounts, apparently Seth Rollins mentioned it on his Twitter account, so did Paige. I agree with you, though. I think if anyone wants to, you know, stay clear of the woods here, they got to just ignore this completely. And I think WWE needs to do that, although they did send out the statement to Yahoo Sports about the medical staff, which I think was important. But other than that, you know, whether it's on the podcast with Steve Austin or anybody who approaches the company for an interview, they need to shut the hell up about that.
And the Ryback has been shooting his mouth off today in full terms. Maybe let's get into some of the stories that involve individuals within the company, and we'll do that now.
Sure.
And I guess we'll start with the Ryback. I mean, CM Punk, in detailing his injuries, a couple of them are specifically due to the Ryback, as Daniel Bryan loves to call him. The first time was, of course, when the franchise, oh no, John Cena, he was hurt. What was the WWE going to do? They were going to throw CM Punk in the cage with a crazy man, and that crazy man was Ryback. Within that match, Punk was kicked in the ribs so hard he broke his ribs. And the Ryback, you know, did what the Ryback does. And then CM Punk goes along and gets away from that program, thankfully for his health. And then once again, in the build-up to the Brock Lesnar program, because Paul Heyman turned on him and Ryback ended up with Paul Heyman, they meet again, and Ryback, and this one I think people still remember to this day, Ryback pitched him off the stage to take a table bump and literally landed him on the concrete, which, along with his busted-up knees, CM Punk now had a bad hip thanks to Ryback. That was the last straw for CM Punk as far as Ryback was concerned. He had, before they started that program, cleaned the slate from the last time, said, let's go out there, you know, you prove that you're better than what people think you are, and I'll prove that I'm better than what I think I am. And this is his first interaction with Ryback, which sets CM Punk off, I think, with reason. He confronts Ryback and says, there's only two answers to this question that you can give me. One, you're deliberately trying to hurt me, or two, you're stupid as F. And Ryback's answer was, he's stupid as F.
Ryback is reckless, and we've noticed that in a lot of his matches. And I think he means well. His heart is in the right place. He's a student of the game, and he wants to get better. And he said that in interviews in the past. And I'll cut him some slack in that regard. But against a guy like CM Punk, if you're going to keep injuring one of the top guys in the company, I mean, you just can't do that. And Punk's complaints are justified. I've never been much of a Ryback guy, but, you know, calling him, and I think he even kind of indicated that Ryback might be on steroids or HGH or something that makes him that size, and again, that's another story entirely about how WWE and their wellness policy.
That he did, and CM Punk attacked the wellness policy, and he also gets into the steroid issue in that big locker room blow up with Vince, but I think we'll leave that for his own for its own little topic. But in terms of the Ryback, he has been on the Twitter today. He was on there yesterday. He put a picture of himself, his wrestling figure, and a CM Punk wrestling figure lying on a table. Kind of classless, kind of stupid, kind of dickish. But then the Ryback was not done. Today, he is claiming that people made slanderous remarks about him and blah, 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 blah. And my point to Ryback would be, you know what? Go ahead. Sign up with a lawyer. CM Punk knows how to get a lawyer. Surely you do. And go ahead and try and sue CM Punk for slander. I'd love to see the case. It's not going to happen, though.
No chance of that. I don't think Ryback is capable of doing that. I think you're giving him too much credit. There's no filter there. He's not, I don't want to say he's an idiot, but he's not the smartest or the sharpest tool in the
shed. He said himself he's an idiot. He's a self-admitted idiot, according to CM Punk.
He'd be proud of it. He's an idiot.
Apparently. But that was the story of Ryback and what went on with him. I think one of the more interesting stories from a total behind-the-scenes storyline booking scenario was this whole idea of the Shield. CM Punk claims in this interview the Shield is basically his idea.
Yeah. Apparently it was supposed to be, or originally the writing staff came up to him and said, we want to give you kind of a heater, we want to give you a heel faction, and the original group was supposed to be CM Punk, The Big Show, Daniel Bryan, and Seth Rollins. But what he wanted to do instead was, let's get three FCW guys together, we'll make them a heel faction, they'll kind of be my backup, and then heading into WrestleMania when he was supposed to face The Undertaker, might add a little bit more believability there just because he would have those three guys, and it was supposed to be Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, and then who he called Chris Hero, but Cassius Ohno in FCW, but Triple H wanted Roman Reigns in there. CM Punk said, well, Triple H wants the pretty boy, someone to make the group look good. So, and he was like, this isn't my hill to die on. We'll put Reigns in there. But it does make sense. I don't think Vince or Triple H would have been able to come up with something like this, right?
Yeah, and this has always been conceived as Triple H's baby up until now. Apparently not. And CM Punk basically handpicked 2/3 of the Shield. And if anything, though, with this one story, there is one person I do feel sorry for in it. Because Roman Reigns is going to become a target now. Because if he wasn't thought of as the chosen one now, boy, oh boy, he is for sure now.
Wow, great point, yeah.
And I just think that kind of bothers me because I don't think Roman deserves that. And I think he was already taking heat from the smarky fans with what's been going on with him and his eventual comeback and where his path is likely to lead. So I do feel sorry for Roman Reigns in that situation. But, and again, this was CM Punk not only, I didn't get the impression it was as much for the Undertaker feud itself. CM Punk, as he states throughout this interview, CM Punk, and this is consistent with other interviews he's done, CM Punk doesn't give a damn about the feud he's in. He's already thinking about the next feud he's doing. And for his way of thinking, he gets through the Undertaker match, and then now he has this faction in the Shield, which he can feud with. Because I assume coming out of that, CM Punk was going to blame the Shield somehow for his loss, and then he feuds with the various members of the Shield. Smart plan, smart guy. I mean, CM Punk doesn't come up with too many bad ideas when it comes to booking for himself.
That's another thing to worry about, too, about WWE's lack of direction when it comes to building long-term feuds. And CM Punk was great at it, and you're right. I mean, it helped his match with Undertaker, but it also gave him something to do for the months that follow. And that's always the way Punk thinks. He's a forward thinker, and he likes to at least know what he's going to be doing for you know, 6, 8, 10 months after whatever he's currently doing. But it doesn't seem like WWE is in that same train of thought, which is crazy because that's what they should be doing. They should have a plan of what they're doing for the next 6 to 8 months.
To which CM Punk says in this interview, and he's kind of alluded to it in other things. If you've watched when CM Punk does those Q&As at like Comic-Cons and stuff like this, he's alluded to this in the past. But he basically says flat out in this, Vince McMahon, when he goes into long-term booking, what's next for John Cena? That's
yeah.
it. That's all. That's all he cares about.
And that's why John Cena is never going to lose the spot that he's in. As long as he's a part of WWE, he's going to be the golden boy. And like I said, he's the money maker, and he's Vince's boy. And there's not going to be any heel turns anytime soon, I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, and that was another thing that Punk brought up in this. He claims that he doesn't have any beef with John Cena, and he actually gets along with him, although he hasn't talked to him since he left the company, so
yeah.
Take that for what it's worth. But he also says, at the time that they wanted him to turn heel when he was champion, he was outselling John Cena in merchandise. And this was one of three different scenarios in which Punk is approached by Vince McMahon to do something, and Vince says, hey, pal, I need you to do such and such, but I'll owe you one. And what the owe you one was for in this case was for CM Punk to turn heel, which obviously when anyone turns heel, generally speaking, that means your merchandise numbers are going to go down, because as CM Punk so delicately put it, little Timmy and Johnny don't want to buy the shirt of the bad guy, which, you know, it makes sense. And little Timmy and Johnny are obviously always buying their John Cena color of the month. So, you know, people always go into the whole thing. And there was other things brought up about John while we're on the topic of John Cena. The oh-so-heralded make-a-wishes that John Cena grants, CM Punk said, you know what? Everybody does those. It's just they only highlight it when John does them. And I firmly believe that.
Well, it's because Cena does the most. And what was it?
Well, according to them.
Yeah.
According to them, he does the most.
No, but Make-A-Wish has even honored him because he has done the most ever for that organization. But are we naive enough to think that only kids, all of these, you know, God bless them, these dying children or these sick children, only want to see John Cena? Absolutely not. There's several other people on the roster who do this, but again, it's John Cena. You want to, you know, acknowledge that to the masses, I guess.
I'm sure even your buddy Kane does Make-A-Wishes.
Concessions Kane, yeah, he does the occasional rendezvous with the hospital, of course.
And while we bring up his name, we might as well bring up the story that involves Kane that was in this interview, which I found totally hilarious. One of the things CM Punk says, one of the rumors that was out there when he left was one of the things he was disgruntled about was working a program with Kane coming out of the Royal Rumble, which he confirms, yeah, I wasn't crazy about it. But he qualifies it by saying he loves Glenn Jacobs, who is Kane, and loves working with him and all that. It's just, it wasn't something that was going to be any good, which I could say is the same for any feud that Kane's involved in these days, but that would be me and not CM Punk. But anyway, the final match of CM Punk's WWE career, as it looks like it will be, was that Royal Rumble. And within that Royal Rumble, as you mentioned earlier, I believe, Kofi Kingston ends up giving CM Punk a concussion because Punk, for whatever reason, was going around telling everyone in this match to come at him and just do their worst to him because he wanted to help get people over. He even, the funny story he had about Rusev, I thought was hilarious,
yeah.
In which he literally has to encourage Rusev that no one around here cares about you. You need to come after me and you need to do something. Rusev's response was he was going to kick him in the corner. And Punk flatly denied that. And you know what? I want to go back and watch that Royal Rumble to see what Rusev actually did.
I remember he gave him a T-bone suplex.
Oh, okay. Well, that, there you go. That was Rusev's big move on CM Punk. But anyway, from that move he took from Kofi Kingston, he ends up getting concussed, and the doctor, who was a running theme in this, who misdiagnosed that thing on his back and wouldn't take it off his back, he goes to him and says he has a concussion, to which the doctor's response is, well, what do you want me to do? Which, in some ways, what can he do? I get that, but CM Punk just starts laughing at this point, and he said, don't do anything, don't bother telling anyone, whatever. But I guess the doctor didn't listen to him, which rightfully he shouldn't, and word got back that Punk was in fact concussed, and the referee came over and said, Kane's coming out, we're going to eliminate you earlier in the match than when they did, to which Punk responded, if Kane touches me, I will quit in the middle of this ring. And that leaves poor Glenn Jacobs in a horrible situation during that match, where he is kind of going over and trying to talk to Punk, but not touch him, obviously. And eventually, Punk is eliminated when he was supposed to be, and I believe he took a bump through a table, did he not?
Yeah, Kane chokeslammed him through the announce table when it was all said and done.
With a concussion.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
What a trooper, eh?
WWE safety at its finest.
Exactly.
Couldn't have just tossed him over the top rope or anything.
How unreliable are their damn tests, though, that they were making him run the ropes afterwards? I don't know the specifics of what the test actually entitles, but to make him run the ropes to confirm that he has a concussion? What kind of crap is that?
Well, CM Punk, basically, I think he doesn't outwardly say it, but he was deliberately trying to flunk the test.
Yeah.
Because he says while he was taking the concussion test, he had on his iPod and he was texting, I believe he said he was texting Colt Cabana.
Yeah.
And he passes the test with flying colors. Amazing. And then they wanted him to go out in the ring and run the ropes. This is at the Monday Night Raw where he leaves. And I guess we'll be leading into this whole story now. Punk says, I'm not going out to run the ropes. Make the call. Do I have a concussion or don't I? To which they refuse to make the call. Oh, and by the way, they want CM Punk to take a drug test as well. Okay. Yeah. And CM Punk refuses the drug test as well. Things get heated. Punk tells a number of people to F off. And then finally says, I've had it. I'm going to talk to Vince. Storms into Vince's office. Hunter is there with Vince. And the fun ensues.
Piss in a cup, Punk, although Triple H wouldn't have been willing to do that. And I remember a story from years and years and years ago about Scott Steiner. I don't know if you've heard it, but when Scott Steiner was told to do a urine test for HGH or whatever it was, and he always said, I'm not going to do a test that Triple H himself isn't willing to do, and Triple H never did it, and I don't think Steiner ended up doing it, and I think that might have to do with the reason why he didn't stay with WWE for as long as he did. But this Punk story that he talks about with the concussions and the drug tests and whatnot, it does bring into question, once again, what the hell is WWE doing, and what are the guidelines, their rules, what the hell is their wellness policy? Is there a wellness policy? We don't know.
You can apparently earn strikes off now for good behavior. How about that?
That's terrible. That really is.
Randy Orton is free and clear now, I would think.
Yeah.
But in this meeting, this infamous meeting that had been reported, and factually it was correct. It was three people in the room, Vince McMahon, Triple H, and CM Punk. That is one of the things that comes up when CM Punk says he's not going to take the test, and he brings up, he brought up Dave Bautista and how stupidly they were booking Bautista, bringing him back as babyface, and blah, 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 which was more comedy than anything in this, and especially as things turned out, it was really funny. As CM Punk pointed out, by him walking out, he did in fact change the WWE from his couch in Chicago, which is fact, I guess. But after that, Triple H points out that, well, Dave took the test, and typical CM Punk, without even blinking an eye, did you? To which was met with silence. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then this meeting, it digressed, and CM Punk talked about how he'd fought through all these injuries, he felt all messed up, he was upset, and this, that, and the other thing. He after he made the comment to Hunter about the drug testing, Vince McMahon said something along the lines of that's the concussion talking. Oh, really? Okay, whatever. At some point, Vince said that. I don't know if it was about Hunter taking the test. It was at some point Vince uttered this. Basically, a lot was said, a lot of angry stuff from Punk, and a lot of basically Vince McMahon and Triple H trying to talk him down. Punk also brought up the fact that when he was at his hottest, what did Vince McMahon do? He fed him to this guy, pointing to Hunter, and Hunter, of course, got the win. And the funny thing about that is Hunter came out of retirement for that match, hadn't wrestled in a long time, and then went right back to being Hunter behind the scenes. No follow-up, no nothing. He was still trying to angle and get his way into the main event for WrestleMania, coming up in WrestleMania 30, and Vince McMahon says to him, well, you are in the main event, you're facing Triple H. And Punk responds, I'm not in the last match, that's the friggin' main event. They were also trying to convince him, because he was praised throughout the company for his match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 29, and Vince and Hunter try and convince him that was the main event of WrestleMania 29, which technically from a best match standpoint, yeah, it was, but it wasn't on last. So Punk is not happy about that either, and it all digresses, and Punk basically, they agree to disagree. Vince McMahon is literally weepy-eyed, and Punk goes to shake his hand, and Vince gives him a hug, which is consistent with what you hear about Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is a very
touchy-feely kind of guy.
Yeah, he likes hugs. He's very emotional. And Punk has said that he and Vince actually have a pretty good relationship. And from all, we'll get into this in a bit, but from all the stories that we heard before Punk had spoke, Vince McMahon has always been the driving force to bring him back. It hasn't been Hunter. And that's obvious in how toxic CM Punk describes his relationship with Triple H, because he basically says they just have never liked each other and never will like each other.
Yeah, the bridge is burnt there for good. And
I think there ever was a bridge.
No, I mean, they had to have some sort of relationship, whether it's good or bad, but now it's just, there's nothing there. Like, it's just hollow ground. There's nothing. And whether he likes to admit it or not, I think CM Punk shunning a WrestleMania 30 match with Triple H, which, you know, it would be a main event. It wouldn't be the last match, but it would be one of the biggest matches on the card. But I think all that mattered to Punk at that time was, I want to be in the last match. I grew up as a wrestling fan, and I was always told that the main event was the last match, and I wanted to do that before my career is over. And frankly, he was screwed out of that opportunity at WrestleMania 27, because the main event, as was documented in this DVD, it should have been CM Punk versus John Cena and not John Cena versus The Miz. But I guess they needed to include The Rock in some capacity. The Miz made sense. It is what it is. But CM Punk and Triple H never happened. He didn't want to make the match happen. He obviously, like you said, he held a grudge because Triple H didn't put him over at the Night of Champions, which I agree was the wrong move to do. I don't know why Triple H won that match, but, it's all history now. But, again, I side with CM Punk on this matter. It's hard to deny all the stuff that he's talking about here.
And Punk claims as well that the match with Hunter, he was going to go over.
But who cares, though?
Yeah, and Punk didn't care at that point. He saw it as too little, too late. And he also said, which I'm sure grinded Triple H's gears, and he talked about during this whole meeting how Hunter was grinding his teeth.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I'm sure cut to the core with Triple H was CM Punk said, quite frankly, and with all due respect, you need this match with me more than I need it with you.
Which is true.
Yeah, to some extent. I think, you know, as it worked out, that wasn't the match people wanted to see anyway. It was Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, and we did end up getting that.
And then CM Punk leaves, and we finally get the storyline that shouldn't have happened in the first place.
Which he kind of indirectly takes credit for, which I think is true. If he doesn't leave, none of it happens.
It wasn't for that, it would probably have been Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus, which was reported.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the point. When you go back and you listen to all the reports that were in the various publications about what was going on behind the scenes, CM Punk's story lines up with all of these stories. Like, and again, going back, we keep going back to this theme of credibility. That's another thread of credibility in CM Punk's favor. Or if you want to be negative, maybe CM Punk's the guy who's been leaking this stuff to the dirt sheets all along, but I don't get that impression, because even Dave Meltzer claims that he has very little relationship with CM Punk. He's met him a few times, but he doesn't consider them close or tight or anything. So,
yeah,
I mean...
CM Punk doesn't seem like one of those dirt sheet kind of guys.
Jericho seems like the type of guy that would talk to the dirt sheets.
Oh, yeah.
That's the kind of guy I think that would, and I mean, you know... And that's no offense to Chris Jericho. I don't care if people talk to dirt sheets or they don't. I don't really care. It's not one way or the other. It's nice that information gets out there, however it gets out there, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's a whole big jumbled mess. And then we get into, there was the thing involving Brock Lesnar, which CM Punk says right off the top, before anyone jumps to conclusions, tries to make problems, Brock and I are great friends, and he says he's great friends with Dave Bautista as well, and that, you know, all the stuff he said about Dave Bautista, they've had conversations, like, post facto, where Dave agrees with everything that CM Punk had said about, you know, coming back and not being the heel, which is something Dave said in interviews as well, that he never thought he should come back as a babyface. So, you know, all of that was said, but the thing with Brock Lesnar was CM Punk, at the height of his popularity, had been approached by a number of companies about wearing logos on his tights, similar to, like, UFC tights, which back in the old days, CM Punk kind of did wear, like, a boxing tight or, what would be classed as an MMA tight now when he wrestled in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, and, during the end, even in TNA too, same shorts, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he wanted to go back to that look and have advertising on his uniform, like his wrestling gear.
Right.
Vince McMahon said, can't do it. Raw sponsors will get mad. They'll be furious. You know, not going to happen. And then in walks Brock Lesnar and has beef jerky stamps on his... tights and whatever else that he promotes, and Punk's like, what the hell? And Vince says, well, you know, he just blows it off, like, doesn't really even give him an explanation, and Punk's furious, and Punk kept going back to this line when he would get angry with Vince, and it goes back to when he signed his contract after the whole pipe bomb promo and all that. Apparently he had said to Vince McMahon, look, once I sign this contract, I'm going to prove to you that I'm everything I say I am. And if there's a day that comes that you don't think I am, fire me. And Punk would consistently go back to this when he would be fighting with Vince McMahon about all these various issues that we've talked about. And, you know, this was, again, Punk gets no explanation. Another thing that happened, CM Punk, and this was widely reported more in the MMA community than I think in the wrestling community, but CM Punk is great friends with Chael Sonnen, the UFC fighter. It had all been worked out with UFC that CM Punk was going to come out and walk out to the ring with Chael Sonnen for his big fight in Chicago. Everything was set. CM Punk, being the good WWE employee that he was, checked with the office, checked with Vince, can I do this? No, you can't do that. Well, why not? That UFC, that's barbaric. Someone's going to die.
Women fight there now.
No, we'll get into the women fighting there now, because I have a theory about that that goes beyond what CM Punk had to say. But right. When it comes to this, he says someone died. And CM Punk's answer, I found it a little bit disturbing, his response. But he literally replied with the fact that Owen Hart had died in the WWE ring. Not exactly the way I would have approached it, but it is factual and all of that. But the point being, you know, Punk just wanted to do something. It would have been good publicity. He was thinking about, you know, the fact he had the Royal Rumble a couple days later. Gets more eyes on him. Maybe a few more people buy the Royal Rumble because they saw him on the UFC show. It all makes sense. So he's denied. A week later, Triple H is brought out with Floyd Mayweather for his fight, leading him out to the ring. One of the things Punk was told why he could not come out at UFC, which was total BS, by the way, that they wouldn't recognize him with a graphic or even acknowledge his presence walking out with Chael, which is BS, because anytime CM Punk has shown up at UFC, they always give him a graphic, they always have him on camera, even when he's just sitting ringside watching the fights, and they do it with everybody connected to the WWE. When Undertaker was there, they acknowledge him, Jim Ross, Stone Cold, all those guys. But when Triple H came out with Mayweather, there was no acknowledgement of him. It was Justin Bieber was there too, and they were talking about Bieber, not Triple H. So that was all BS. And you know, then he gets into Vince in that conversation about not allowing him to do the UFC fight. As you mentioned, Vince goes, "Do you know they're going to have women fighting there?" To which CM Punk responds to Vince, and correctly so, yeah, Vince, I do, and it's going to be the hottest thing going. You just wait and see. Which, let's speed ahead to SummerSlam. Who was at SummerSlam there, Chris Walder?
Was it your girl?
Yeah, it was Ronda Rousey, the Four Horsewomen, and boy, oh boy, did the WWE roll out the red carpet for this barbaric female who was beating up other chicks.
It's the Amazon woman.
I mean, do you mean to tell me that Vince McMahon would be a hypocrite, and if Ronda Rousey would appear at WrestleMania 31, he wouldn't welcome that with open arms? I have a hard time believing that.
His opinion changes with the tides. If there's a full moon now, then Vince is going to change his point of view yet again. And not related to CM Punk, but he changed his opinion recently about Divas on Total Divas winning the Divas Championship, and look who's the Divas Champion now. So you could sway Vince McMahon easily. It doesn't take much.
Or does that have to do more with who was the Divas Champion and who wasn't on Total Divas?
That could be. Yeah, good point. Yeah,
that might have a little something to do with it. But I want to speak to something else though, because I'm a big fan of the women's wrestling, and the women that can actually wrestle. I'm not talking about Cameron and all those disgusting people that...
Go right to Cameron.
She's the standard for can't wrestle to me.
Yep.
But anyway, point being, this mindset of what Vince thinks about women fighting in the UFC, I think, speaks all to how the Divas division has been booked. He doesn't treat them like they're real athletes or real fighters. He treats them like they're eye candy, and we've evolved. This isn't the world we live in. Like, Ronda Rousey is one of the most popular fighters on the planet right now. That's fact. And Vince just doesn't understand that, and doesn't... It makes you question how that whole entire Divas division is booked based on that. Like, it's bizarre to me, and it was one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting to get that insight into how Vince sees women fighting as a bad thing.
Well, it's different in WWE because in UFC, the women, there is enough star power there to draw and possibly headline pay-per-views, which they have done in the past. I mean, Rousey right now is arguably the biggest star in Ultimate Fighting Championship, but in WWE, it's hard to say, okay, we'll start booking the Divas and all of the girls as equals to the men, because that's not going to happen. But at the same time, what Vince needs to do is kind of put at least some sort of emphasis on it, because there is an audience out there that does want to see the Divas wrestle. And for example, you know, at Survivor Series, I think Paige was the most over girl in that match, and the reaction that she got in that Survivor Series tag team disaster, whatever you want to call it. But then there she is, just kind of being, you know, lost in the shuffle. She gets pounded down by four girls who people don't really give a damn about, but that's just how they are. That's just how Vince McMahon operates with the Divas division. It's just kind of like, it's there, you know, it's kind of like his little plaything that he can mess around with once in a while and kind of make important, but at the end of the day, it's just the Divas division. That's it. It's nothing more.
And, you know, it was interesting, and I imagine AJ Lee was well aware of what was coming when it comes to this interview. And it was interesting, the promo she cut this week. I found it very interesting, that promo she cut on the Bella about talent not being sexually transmitted.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like the dying words of someone who knows she's gone.
Yeah, it sounded like she... Well, if she knows this interview's coming out, she knows that you know, all kinds of things are awaiting her once that happens, whether it be her leaving or if she wants to stay. I don't know why, and that's the thing. That's why I said the one thing missing in this interview was how on earth can Punk or AJ justify her still being there.
Hey, one thing we need to point out too, this isn't the last we're hearing of CM Punk. He's going back on next week to answer fan questions, and let me tell you, there is going to be at least a couple that are going to ask him, why the hell is AJ still with WWE, and is she going to follow suit and leave as well?
It'll be interesting to see if he addresses that question. I think I did mention they were going to do a second podcast off the top. If I didn't, yeah, they are. You can seek out the email, although it's probably stuffed by now, and your question probably won't see the light of day. But they are going to take questions from fans. The only ground rules that were set were to be respectful and just ask your question of CM Punk, which, you know, I think for people that know CM Punk, they kind of know what he means in terms of being respectful. So he doesn't care if you have a negative thing to say or a positive thing to say, as long as you say it in a reasonable, you know, adult manner, he will answer it. So
he told that story when he went to the Blackhawks game and he was trying to get a hot dog at the stand or whatever, and some idiot fan said, "Hey, Punk, can I get a picture?" And
no, not Punk. No, no. He
wasn't
said
it Punk?
He said the magic word. He said Phil.
Oh, he said Phil. Oh, even worse. Yeah, there you go. No one should respond to something like that. And Punk always said, if you're respectful to me and you come up and you say, "Hi, my name is so-and-so, I'm a big fan," or whatever, and you try and make conversation like a human being instead of just kind of shouting in the back of the room and demanding something. Because, again, you know, when you're in the forefront like Punk or celebrities or professional wrestlers or athletes or whatever, they don't owe anyone anything, really. I mean, they could do whatever they want in the sense of giving autographs or taking photos. And I think Punk does it the right way, and that guy obviously did it the opposite way.
Yeah, and as Punk pointed out, on that same night, four different people he took pictures with, and he wishes to God that they would have contacted Wrestling Dirt Sheets and kind of stood up for him, but that didn't happen.
Nope.
So I don't know how great of fans they were. Or maybe they're just not internet snarky fans. Maybe that's it.
They just thought he was someone else.
No, they knew who he was, but they just might not be up on the whole internet wrestling scene, which sometimes isn't a bad thing. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. We've covered a ton of ground. I don't think there's too much that we've missed in this. Is there anything that you can think of that we've missed?
No, I mean, you know, him getting fired on his wedding day obviously was a big deal. The injuries, the his problems with creative and whatnot. In a 90-minute interview, there's really nothing else that I could really think that he would need to touch on. But I'm sure someone is going to, you know, send him a question, and we're going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe we forgot about that. And that's why it's going to be must-listen next week, too. And now we know that this thing is going to come out, unlike this time where it was just like, oh, you know, a couple of people broke the story and said, oh, yeah, CM Punk is going to be on Cabana's podcast. He's going to talk about WWE. And then the internet broke down. You couldn't even access his bloody site. I mean, it's going to be even worse next week.
Yeah, because everyone will be waiting for it, so it'll be something. I meant, though, in the interview that they had, we covered pretty much everything, right? I don't think we left anything out.
Do you agree with me that this is the biggest wrestling story of the year?
Wrestling story of the year? I think this is the wrestling story of the decade. In all honesty, I think, and we don't know how this is going to play out, so, you know, time will dictate what this interview actually means in the whole history of wrestling and the history of the WWE, but it could be a watershed moment depending on what happens from here. Because Punk has raised a ton of questions for how they treat their athletes in terms of both their medical condition when it comes to concussions and other things, injuries and stuff like that, and their steroid policy. And both of those things were addressed very thoroughly by him. And if the right people pick up on it, you mentioned the Yahoo story. How quickly was the WWE to respond to that? They were, because it's mainstream media and they don't want this to become an issue for them corporately. If it becomes an issue for them corporately, this is a groundbreaking, ground-changing moment for professional wrestling, because the WWE will be forced to address a whole lot of things that they don't want to. And we've seen what's happened in the NFL, with what's gone on with that league, with a number of incidents. The moment in time that we live in right now, no professional sports league or sports entertainment, whatever WWE wants to class themselves as these days, nobody wants that right now in their kitchen, because people are just, it's a mob mentality right now, and they are going to get absolutely swarmed if that happens. And, you know, it's interesting. And then the other side of it is the whole financial thing, and the WWE network and all of that. And I don't think that's as significant for the WWE as much as the medical stuff, because I think the medical stuff is a hot button issue and they can really get nailed for it. They've already had their troubles with the network. I think people have their opinions of it and probably agree with some of the assessments of CM Punk on his thoughts on the network, as far as it working or not working and all of that. But it could be a watershed moment. I was trying to piece this together, and I was like, what's the interview that would be bigger than this? And the one I came up with was if Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, or Vince McMahon ever admitted the Montreal Screwjob was a work. That's all I could come up with.
That's about it.
Like
really think that, of anything else.
Like, that's how significant I feel this interview is. And like I've been trying to harp on throughout this whole podcast, this isn't, if you think this is just about CM Punk, it isn't. It's about the primary function of the WWE in a lot of ways, and the stories that Punk is telling, they could be the same stories for any number of wrestlers that are in this company that just haven't come out and said it because they're still a part of this company. Like, I'd be very interested to hear what Daniel Bryan's story is with all that's gone on with his injuries and whatnot. And if he has taken a different approach from CM Punk, like I talked about earlier, in where he hasn't caved to the pressure and he's remained out. I mean, think about how Daniel Bryan, other than maybe this week, has been portrayed on television by the WWE. He's kind of been portrayed as, you know, this soft guy that, I mean, I know everyone's being heels, and this is where that line between work and reality gets really blurred, but they've really tried to downplay him since his injury, and I mean, part of that is he obviously can't get out there and wrestle, but part of that is, like, you know, John Cena is Superman. He always comes back. He's back, like, 3 weeks before he's supposed to be all the time, and I think Vince McMahon has that mentality that everyone should be that way.
It's not viable, it's not realistic, it's not safe, and it bothers me a lot just because, especially with a guy like Daniel Bryan, because we all know how serious his injuries are and how long he's been away from the ring, and now we're hearing about CM Punk and his staph infections and his elbow injuries and his broken ribs, and maybe WWE isn't, you know, taking these things as seriously as they should, because at the end of the day, all they care about is who they can put in front of a camera, who they can showcase to the WWE universe, and that's the bottom line with them, their ratings, their WWE network buys, their pay-per-view buys, and they want their A-plus players always, you know, on the card. They want them, you know, entertaining the masses, but again, if people are injured, they do need time away from the ring, and these things don't go away overnight, and you can't force your guys back sooner than they need to be just because you feel that you're in a position where you can't survive without them. And, I mean, we're probably going to call this a day soon. I just want to touch on a couple of things because I've heard a lot of fan responses about this interview and their opinion about CM Punk, and they still call him a crybaby and a prima donna and whatnot. And 2 points I just want to make. I saw someone on YouTube make a video about their response about CM Punk, and one of the points that they made was something that I've seen a lot on social media the last 24 hours. They felt that CM Punk deliberately had this interview take place on the day that he did because he wanted to take away attention from WWE after they debuted Sting at Survivor Series. Let me tell you something. That's the last thing on CM Punk's mind. WWE shot themselves in the foot by not putting Sting on Monday Night Raw. So CM Punk could give two iotas if Sting is with WWE and if it's taking attention away from him. Not like he wants the attention in the first place. CM Punk has been a loner in the past. He doesn't want all of this media stuff. That's why he did the Colt Cabana podcast in the first place. So put that story to rest. And another point that I've seen is that when CM Punk was in WWE, all he cared about was himself, and he never tried to put over any of the young talent. What kind of crap is that? He says in the podcast that he tried to get three FCW guys together. I know they were all indie guys. I know it was Hero, Rollins, and Ambrose. But you know what? In FCW at the time, their most talented guys were independent wrestlers. Why on else would he want to put over a guy like Rusev at the Royal Rumble by letting him attack him more so than stomping him in the corner? Why on earth would he want to work with a guy like Curtis Axel, someone who Triple H didn't do one thing for in their mini feud on Monday Night Raw? Why would he, a guy like Ryback, who injured him several times, and all CM Punk could care about is, let's go out there and prove everyone wrong. Let's say that you're worth something. Let's say that I'm worth something. So anyone out there who thinks that CM Punk was 100% about CM Punk needs a reality check. And that's my little rant there, James.
CM Punk doesn't give a damn about a 55-year-old guy in makeup. I'll just say that.
Exactly. hey, that's all you need to say.
It really does. It's not even in his thought process, or does he care in the slightest about that. That's so far from the truth. And to put over your point about how CM Punk cares about putting over young talent and being a part of it, who's been the guy who's had the loudest voice talking about someone like Tyson Kidd? That would be CM Punk. Who was the guy who put Zack Ryder on the map? That was CM Punk. Who was the guy that, while he was champion for 434 days, and by the way, now we know was going through all of this shit, drove down to Florida, to FCW, where he wasn't even supposed to be there, or he was just supposed to sign autographs, and worked a match with Dean Ambrose before anyone knew who he was? That was CM Punk. CM Punk, people may not believe this, and if they don't believe it, it's fine. But CM Punk, as much as he can be cynical and snarky, he still has an idealism about him, and he really, truly in his heart, wanted to make that place better, like he says in his own documentary. He really legitimately wanted to do that, but I think what the last 3 years proved to him is he can't, and no one can. There's only one guy at the end of the day that can change what the WWE is, and that's Vince McMahon, and that's been made crystal clear time and time again with this company, and it is what it is. But I think, you know, CM Punk, he doesn't have an agenda with this. If he had an agenda, he would have came out far sooner than he did. He would have, like, all of these stories wouldn't be coming out now in November. He waited 10 months to say anything about this. 10 months. Like, and by the way, for the whole stupid thing about Sting, where the heck was CM Punk, like, on the inside of knowing when Sting was going to come out, and he just decided to do this? Do you think he just walked over to Colt Cabana's and they did this, like, on a Thursday? No, I'm sure a lot of time and thought went into it, and if that's the case, obviously he would have had no idea that Sting was debuting. It's ridiculous. And the fact that, you know, that's this whole thing. Wrestling fans, they frustrate me in the sense of they want change and they want all the things that CM Punk represents and has supported and been behind, but then who are the ones that jump on with all these part-timers and get behind them and want to see all these nostalgia acts like Sting and The Undertaker and all of that? At some point, you've got to decide what you want. Do you want change, or do you want a bunch of old guys that you remember from when you were a kid? You can't have both to the extent that you want to have them. Like, it's either one or the other. You get change, or you get, like, a nostalgia act.
And now Punk is gone. And it's this whole matter can be put to rest. We'll get one more podcast out of him, and there's not going to be any more rumors. There's not going to be any more dirt sheet stories. This is it for Punk, and he's going to go off into the sunset. He has a beautiful wife. He's, you know, writing comic books. He's making television appearances. He's, you know, doing online videos. He seems happy. And at the end of the day, for anyone who was a fan of his or still is, I think you need to be willing to just say it's over with WWE. He's not going to be a wrestler anymore. That part of his life is now over and done with. And now this new chapter begins. And I'm all for it. I'm a big fan of people doing what they want to do in this world, being content, being satisfied, waking up every day with enthusiasm. And I don't think Punk was doing that when he was with WWE. A lot of things happened that we touched on in this podcast. And you know what? Good for him. I hope he stays away. I don't mean that because I don't want to see him wrestle again. I really did feel like he was one of the best in the world at what he did. But all the power to Phil Brooks, man.
Yeah, and one thing you mentioned, too, about social media, I'll talk about a few more enlightened people that I've seen on social media, and they talked about, again, this is a kind of pulling back of the curtain that makes you realize, hey, wait a second, these guys are real people. They have real lives. They have legitimate concerns beyond just being a pro wrestler and making money doing that. They have lives. And I think, you know, I'm going to tie this back to someone who's just about to debut in the WWE. One of my connections of why I love Kevin Steen so much is because I understand who he is as a person, and I understand what motivates him as a human being. And that, when used correctly, can be so compelling to use as part of your product. And I think the WWE tries to back away from that a lot of times. And they shouldn't, because it should be realized that, yeah, this is this kind of fantasy WWE universe and all of that. But at the end of the day, they're real people with real concerns and real issues. And if you feel that you want people to be tested for concussions in pro sports and athletes and all that, you should feel the same way about professional wrestlers. You should want them to be treated in the same way and with the same care and the same knowledge. And if you're not one of those people and you're just barbaric and you don't care, fine, that's great. And if you can live with your life like that, all the power to you. I can't. I like human beings. I don't just like a character in a gimmick. I like the person behind that gimmick. And I think that's most of all what CM Punk's story has kind of brought to light, which is something we always kind of know in the back of our head, but it kind of brings it to the front of your brain. And I think, you know, that's probably a lesson from this as well. I think this interview just has so many layers to it, and I think it'll be something that people are going to react to a lot of stuff in the immediate here and now, but I think it's something people will reflect back on for many years to come as a real window into the world of professional wrestling as it has been at this point in time. And you know, things have gotten better, but we're still a long way from having things right and the way they should be for professional wrestlers. And you know, I want to see a better wrestling world for all of these wrestlers, regardless of if they wrestle for the WWE, ROH, even TNA, Lucha Underground, wherever the hell they're earning a living, New Japan Pro Wrestling. I just want to see guys be safe, be healthy, and be able to earn an honest living from doing something that they love. And that's it. And I think the sad thing about it is something that CM Punk truly loved now is a great source of pain for him right now. Like I think he's got past it, and he talked about getting past the bitterness, but something that he loved, he doesn't love anymore. And that's sad, too.
Amen, James. Well said.
I don't think we can say any more about this. I mean, I hope people appreciated this. I hope no one was upset by the fact that we just went full bore at this topic for our entire time with you this week. But I felt it was important, and I felt, you know, it was a story that, although on the surface is just about CM Punk and his story, I think as we've tried to illustrate over the last hour and a half or so, it's got many more layers to that. And I think it should make everyone stop and pause and think, as people who enjoy professional wrestling and the business of professional wrestling, and what we truly want for the people in it, and what they deserve and what they have coming to them as human beings just trying to earn a living like we all are.
It was an eye-opening podcast, and we thank Cole Cabana and Phil Brooks for putting this together, because it brought closure. And I think that's what a lot of people needed from this whole story. And again, next week there's going to be more, and we're probably going to dissect some of the answers he has to the questions that the fans are going to throw his way, and I'm all for it, and I can't wait to do it. But for now, you know, I would, if you haven't checked out the interview, I mean, we pretty much said everything that happens, but you can always go back and give it a listen, because it's an enthralling 2 hours, and I loved every second of it.
Oh, I would encourage people to do it. Like, honestly, you owe it to yourself to go listen to this. Like, and it's not because I'm buddies with Cole Cabana and I want to see his podcast do well or anything like that. It's not. It's just, this is compelling, compelling stuff, and as much as you will hear everyone tweet about it, talk about it, write about it, you really need to hear it from the guy himself, CM Punk, because this is his story, and he tells it in a way only that he can. And with that said, thanks to Chris Walder for being along for the ride with me. And we'll get back more to our usual program next week. Obviously, Final Battle will be right around the corner, and we'll be previewing that and hopefully have a guest or two along for the show with that. And we'll get back to talking about the WWE and all the rest of the wrestling news and views going around in the world. But, hey, you know, I agree with you. I think that is the one thing that fans who were true fans of CM Punk desperately wanted was to have some closure to all this. And I believe CM Punk has, in his own way, provided that in the best way he knows how, and credit to him. And, you know, it really, I think the last 3 to 6 months have shown, you know, who are the true CM Punk fans and who were just fans of some character they saw on their television. And that's, if you've listened to this interview and you still are making snarky comments about CM Punk, you never liked the guy to begin with.
The cream of the crop! Nobody does it better.
More questions!
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye!